Good afternoon. This is Melanie Lilliston with the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans, and today we're going to be having a conference call on the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. This conference call is going to be focused on organizations that have either applied for funding before and received it or have applied and are familiar with the actual application. So we are not going to go in as much detail as previous call, but we do have the audio from that call on our website if you do would like to listen to that. For those of you who did not receive our materials via email, you can download those from our website at www.nchv.org. On the right-hand side, you'll see the conference call link. When you open that up, you'll see the call information and then several bullet points that will have different material for you. The first one, the presentation, is what I'm going to be going over during the call today. The others are just some reference materials that you can either take a look at for either education within your organization or to familiarize yourself with the programs a little bit more. The link is also provided for the full SGA, which I will be making reference to, as well as a fact sheet, which is a good front and back one-page document that can be used to explain the program a little bit better to perhaps other organizations in your community, other partners, or other staff members that might not be as familiar with the program, as well as the HVRP Best Practices Project, which does provide some real-life case studies of programs that have been successful in receiving funding and starting their project up. So those are the materials that I'm going to be referencing today. We are recording the call, and there will be an audio placed on the website in the next couple of days. I'm going to give a brief presentation, and then we're going to take questions, and we'll take as many questions as we can at the conclusion of the call. So please just make note of any questions that you may have as I go through the material and reference those at the conclusion of the call. But I am going to go ahead and get started in the essence of time, make sure that we follow our schedule here. And like I said, today's call is just going to go over some general information on the HVRP, the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program, and discuss some of the few changes that were announced under this current SGA, and then take questions as time allows. So if you look at slide 2 on the presentation that is on our website, it's just a simple reminder of the HVRP goals. They keep in mind that this program is employment specific, and it is targeted to provide services to assist in reintegrating homeless veterans into meaningful employment within the labor force and to stimulate the development of effective service delivery systems that will address the complex problems facing homeless veterans. The reason I mention these is that while this is a employment-specific program, it does have quite a bit of services and access to those types of services embedded within the program design. So all of the activities that your program takes place with or your organization provides should tie back to these objectives, and it's important to keep these in mind as we move forward through the application and the program focus. This year, under the program year 2010, the SGA, Solicitation for Grant Proposals, it is a specific year that will once again start July 1st and run through June 30th of 2011. It is a funding for 1 year with two optional years of renewal funding based on the performance of your organization, appropriations, and the Department of Labor's desire to continue the program. There is $5 million available for urban grants, and these awards range from $75,000 to $300,000, and $5 million is available for non-urban, and these awards range from $75,000 to $200,000. Now, one of the things you want to keep in mind here is that when we talk about the urban and non-urban is that the urban refers to the 75 most populated U.S. cities, and these are based on census data. In addition, you must show which category you're going to apply for, either urban or non-urban, if the geographic location that your organization is going to be serving is not listed as one of the 75 cities, then it is a non-urban grant. The key thing here is that it doesn't necessarily mean where your organization is located. It's where the services will be provided and the locations that the population that you will serve. So you are going to have to show a map as in previous years, you're going to have to show and demonstrate the areas that you will be serving. So it doesn't necessarily have to be restricted to where your organization is located. Typically, that is the case, but if you have multiple sites or have different locations that maybe your home office with a satellite office or something along those lines, it doesn't necessarily have to be the exact mailing address of your organization. However, you must define and let the scores of the application know what geographic areas you will be serving, usually via graph or some sort of picture that will show them that. One thing that has been changed is in previous years, you can and will only be allowed to apply underneath one category. So you must pick either urban or non-urban based on the geographic locations that you will be serving. So you must identify which category you are applying for within your application. Program design, as I mentioned before, provides comprehensive services through client-centered case management. And those words are used quite a bit within the SGA, client-centered case management. We're going to go through that in a few minutes, but essentially you're providing services personalized to the individuals enrolled in your program and have them based on the local needs of those individuals. You're going to partner with federal, state, and local resources. You must have clear strategies and obtainable goals for training, employment placements, and retention of employment. Everything ties back to employment. Your program design is aimed at removing those barriers to employment and getting a veteran up to the point where they're able to access and get employment long-term and be able to sustain that employment. You must be flexible to local needs and meet the complex needs of veterans. For those of you who have been around for a while, you know that veterans have and do require some intense case management in some areas, and your organization must demonstrate how you're able to meet those goals and complex needs of veterans. You must demonstrate the capacity to partner with workforce investment programs and other agencies to develop jobs. Not only do you need to help and get employment for veterans, you need to show that you're able to work and develop jobs within your local community so that way there is an avenue for those veterans to get employment. And one of the things that is a new requirement, and I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about the stand-down requirement, is that you are responsible for participation in a stand-down grant. This is a new requirement, and if you look on slide 6, this is the new and specific information that does relate to a stand-down. As I mentioned, grantees and sub-grantees are responsible for participating in a stand-down. And probably the biggest change here is that you must apply separately for funding from the DOL stand-down grants. These are funds for up to $10,000 available for a 3-day event and $7,000 for a 1-day event. Funding is based on the length of the event. The link for the actual application is listed on page 6 there, slide 6. Page 3. But the most important thing to keep in mind is that HVRP grantees may no longer use existing or budgeted HVR funds to conduct or supplement a stand-down event. You must apply separately for stand-down dollars. So the biggest things to keep in mind for stand-downs are that you have to participate in one of them. Doesn't mean you have to host the event. It just means you have to participate. And if you want money to support the stand-down locally, you must apply for the funds separately. So there will be no budgeted line item for stand-downs within your application. You must apply separately for those funds. All right, moving on, the scope of the program design. Essentially, we're talking about not duplicating services, looking at diverse jobs, and one of the things that is incorporated in this SGA in the terms of diversity in jobs. Things to keep in mind here are the levels of education, the different levels of employment, the different salaries that may be there. Some of your clients may have high school education. Some of them may have higher education, either college or postgraduate work. Those different education levels will merit different job opportunities, and your organization must show that you have the diversity to get jobs and get veterans placed in those different levels of employment. So you're going to be doing this through providing outreach, intake, pre-enrollment assessments, job placement services, job training, referrals to employment services, job search, workshops, resume writings, all of those things that come into play. Also going to be work with and coordination, and it's very important that you coordinate with veteran service programs, your DVOPs, your leavers, your continuums of care, any grant per diem programs that may be in your local community. Essentially making sure that you're not duplicating resources, but also accessing as many as you can for those local veterans in your community. Also going to want to look at veteran service organizations, your AMVETs, your DAVs, the VFWs, American Legions. In certain communities, those organizations will provide a variety of services. The Department of Labor Vets Office wants to know and see that you are partnering with those organizations and really supplementing the funds that they are giving you to provide the most services to those veterans. You're also going to have referrals to healthcare, counseling, and rehab services, and any other supportive services that will help in the reintegration of the veterans back into the labor force. One of the most important things and something to keep in mind is that you have to have referrals to housing, which means that you are not able to use funds for housing, but you must have an access to and referrals to the housing piece. As most of you know, it's hard to get employment and keep employment if you do not have housing, and so this is a vital piece, and you must show strong linkages within referrals to housing within your application. Another change that is a little bit different from previous years, while the 80% of enrolled participants must participate in training activities, the change here is that they're talking about formal training. So while things as basic life skills and money management is required, that is not considered a formal training activity and does not count towards the 80% requirement. So you must base the services and trainings on the needs of the veterans enrolled in your program, and 80% of the enrolled participants must participate in formal training activities separate from the basic skills instructions. So that is a change from previous years and something that you should take into consideration. While you do have to have those basic skills, those don't count towards your 80% of your training requirements. Okay, moving on to slide 9 here. When we talk about our performance measures, they still are the two primary outcome measures for the HVRP are the entered employment rate and the retention following placement. Now, Appendix H has more information on these. These are the same outcome goals that they have used in the past, but the percentages are a little bit different. So the minimum rate for the entered employment, the EER, is 66%, and the retention following placement minimum rate is 65%. So the one thing you are going to have to do is you are going to show, and if you've had the funding in the past or if you have worked with employment programs in the past, you must show that your organization has been able to meet these goals within the past 3 years. They are going to ask for past performance for up to 3 years. And I'm going to go into this in a little bit of detail as we talk about the rest of the application, but it is up to you to show that you will be able to meet these and that you have had previous experience meeting these goals and objectives in the past. So the one advantage that you would have here, if you have provided employment services in previous years, this is how you're going to show that you would be the best suited for this program and for funding within your community. So just a reminder of what the intern employment rate is. It's the same calculations as the previous years, but you want to make sure what is being asked for and how those numbers are being calculated. On slide 10, we talk about the number of participants who enter employment divided by the number of participants who have exited the program. That is the intern employment rate. And these will be reported within your common measures reporting. To calculate the retention following placement, it's the number of participants who entered employment who are still employed 180 and 270 days after their placement, divided by the total number of participants who have entered employment, and that will give you your retention following placement rate. So that's just a quick reminder of how those things are calculated and what the main goals and objectives of the program are. This is a, as most of you are familiar with, a highly competitive program, and they are looking for superior program results well above the minimum requirements that we just talked about. Several organizations and many organizations have success rates and placement rates well above the minimum, closer to 80-85%. So the higher that you can be successful in doing that, the more competitive your grant will be. Keep in mind that no program model is mandatory, but programs must be responsive to the needs of local communities and achieve the HVRP objectives. As I mentioned, it is an employment-specific program. However, you must provide services that will remove those barriers to employment for veterans enrolled in your program. We also have some things listed that should be included in your program, including outreach, assessments, referrals, enrollment, development of IEPs, individual employment plans, participation in training, supportive services, all of the things that are needed to get a person or veteran back up to speed and enter employment, and then entering into full-time employment and then follow-up. There still is a key feature that is required underneath the follow-up for individuals that are enrolled and exited in the program. Some of the reporting requirements still very similar to previous years. The tracking is still done through common measures, and you will be using a goals chart to fill those out. But you also have to do your quarterly technical performance reports, and you will must show that you will be following up those participants who have exited your program for 90, 100, and 270 days after they enter employment. So this is a long-term tracking process that does take place after the grant is over. So you must include how you're going to track these individuals 180 and 270 days after they have exited, after they have entered employment. So just some general overview things there, a few minor changes from previous years, and particularly want to talk a little bit and spend some time going over the actual grant application to give you some reminders and tips as you do start to fill out that application. As we mentioned, they do have specific outcomes that are achieved through programs designed to remove the barriers veterans are facing to employment. You must make sure that all of the information that they ask for within the application is included. If you look, as we flip through here, we're going to go through each section of the actual application, but it's important to keep in mind that there is a scoring process and that each different section has a minimum and a maximum number of points that will be awarded. Some of the eligible HVRP applicants are listed on slide 15 here. Your organization or the organization requesting the funding must fall into one of these categories. Now, you can partner with other organizations to apply. However, you must fall into one of these four categories in order to be eligible to apply. State and local workforce investment boards, public agencies, these include state, county, and city levels. Federal levels, VAs, those types of things will not be funded. So it must be state, county, and city levels. A for-profit or commercial entity or a nonprofit organization, including faith-based and community-based organizations. Typically, these will be the 501c3s that will apply and will have the nonprofit designation included. If you are a 501c4, you are not eligible to apply. You must partner with another organization that falls in one of these categories. Remember that this grant is competitively awarded on an annual basis, and then with optional years of funding up to 2 more years for a total of 3 years that you can receive funding underneath the HVRP grant. You can apply both online and through the mail. For online applications, you can go to www.grants.gov. If you have never done this before, you want to start the process and underneath Get Started and include registration steps. Go ahead and start this now because it does take several days to complete for you to be able to enter information into the grants.gov format. The different application types are listed there. And if you do not wish to or do not want to submit your application online through grants.gov, you can do it and send it in to the grant officer listed in the SGA. They are going to be mailed and or hand-delivered to the DC office. The address is listed there. You are going to include one original signed in blue ink. So that's important to keep in mind. One original signed with blue ink and two copies of the cover letter, executive summary, technical proposal, and cost summary. So all of these things, you're going to have three copies of each, one original and two copies. You are encouraged and recommended to use tabs or dividers to show the three different sections. So your cover letter will be on top, then you'll have a divider for your executive summary, a divider for your technical proposal, and a divider for your cost proposal, however it makes sense for you to do that within your program package. The application for these must be delivered by 5 p.m. on April 26, 2010. You have to meet the deadline. There is no extension, and I always recommend to send it either FedEx or some sort of delivery confirmation to make sure that it is sent and received in the department. As I mentioned, there are three parts to the HVRP application: the executive summary, which is 1 to 2 pages, the technical proposal, which is not to exceed 15 pages, which is your narrative, what your organization writes, and the cost proposal, which does not have a limit there, but it is filling out and submitting the forms and the budget, those types of things. The total application cannot exceed 75 pages. It must be in 12-point font with 1-inch margins all the way around. Top, bottom, left, and right are 1-inch. Attachments are included in the 75-page maximum. This was a question last year, but 75 does include the attachments, so make sure you take a look at that and do not go over the 75-page maximum. And as I mentioned, the major sections and subsections are to be divided and clearly identified, and most importantly, all pages must be numbered. So it should go from 1 to 75 maximum in chronological order. The executive summary reflects the overall strategy, the proposed area to be served, the grantee's experience in serving residents in the proposed service area, the proposed strategy, program design, method, projects, and or statements of work with schedules or timelines, and descriptions of major success for the plan. I always suggest that it's best to write this last, because at that point you'll have your application completed, and since this does serve as a summary, it can and is best to wait until the end, so that way you know what your whole program design is, and your executive summary will be inclusive of all the different activities there. But this is 1 to 2 pages, and it is the first thing that one of the first things that will be read during your grant scoring process. Now, on page 20 is the technical proposal sections. These bullet points are all of the subheadings that should be included and clearly identified. Use a bullet point for each one of these sections and make sure that you clearly identify them, and it's easy to see exactly where these sections are within your application. I'm going to go through each one of these categories and briefly talk about what they're asking for. But starting on page 32 of the SGA, it specifically tells you what should be included in each one of these categories. So starting with the need for a program, as I stated earlier, you must identify the geographic area to be served and provide an estimate number of homeless veterans in the designated geographic area. Include any poverty and unemployment rates in the area, and include and identify the disparities in the local community infrastructure. And talk about the barriers that are faced by veterans in your community. Essentially, you're showing the reader that you understand what is going on in your local community and why this program is needed there. You're also going to include any labor market information and job opportunities in the employment fields and industries that are in demand in the geographic area. So you're going to talk about why the program is needed and what are some of the growth of job areas that you feel could be used or have the veterans access during this program. The next section is the approach or strategy to increase employment and job retention. You're going to describe the specific employment services and training activities that will be used underneath this grant application. You're going to describe the applicant's local employment network, including any other groups that will be working with to train HVRP participants, and the jobs that will be filled by these individuals. And then you're going to talk about the flow or the process that of employment and training services for each of the participants in your program. Indicate any types of trainings that are going to be provided, any time lengths, how that will feed into the jobs that are needed within the community, as well as talking about how you're going to follow up and provide a retention plan for that 180 and 270 days after they haven't entered employment. And then this is also going to be where you're going to include the recommended format for Common Measured Plan Quarterly Technical Performance Goals, the Appendix D. This is going to show how what success you're going to set your bar at and how you're going to meet those. So this section is going to be the meat of your application, one of the bigger sections of your application, and describe in particular some of those services and how they're going to be accessed by those individuals in your program. The next section is the linkages with other facilities that serve homeless veterans. You're going to describe any other linkages or partnerships that you have with programs that are going to be working or referring individuals to the program, and any other networks that serve currently serve homeless veterans. Those include both private and public agencies, federal, state, and local community programs that will be working there, including the local continuum of care that are there. The next section is linkages with other providers of employment and training services to homeless veterans. You're going to describe the same types of things here, but in particular you're going to be focusing on the networks and relationships that deal with employers, educational providers, and other providers of services to homeless veterans. You want to make sure that you include your relationship with the DVOPs and the leavers, as well as your Workforce Investment Act, so that way the department later sees that you are partnering and working with those groups and not duplicating resources in programs that might already be in place. You're also going to discuss the linkages with other federal programs, federal agencies. These include HUD, in particular their Continuum of Care organizations, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the Department of Veterans Affairs, in particular their any of their grant and per diem programs or their transitional CWT programs. The proposed supportive services for strategy for veterans. This talks about how and what supportive services will be available and be obtained by veterans in your program. These include transportation, mental and physical health services, and or substance abuse and recovery programs. These are some of the major barriers that veterans have in order to get and receive employment, and this section discusses how you're going to help remove some of those and focus in on some of the services that are needed by those veterans. Next will be the organizational capacity to provide required program activities. This is where I mentioned before is you're going to talk about your prior experience within the past 3 years. You must show and provide information showing outcomes of employment and training programs that you have had in the past 3 years, and specifically in terms of who have entered and maintained employment. They will not have access to your quarterly reports if you're a current grantee, so you must include those numbers, or at least an idea of what would be included in those numbers to show that you are successful and have been able to meet those goals and objectives of the common measures. Next section is measures of success. You're going to describe the measures of success for the proposed plan, including your goals, number served, numbered hired, increased wages, educational attainment, cost effectiveness, results-oriented model, feedback mechanism, performance accountability, evaluation and improvement, and or the proposed system to monitor the implementation of activities. So this talks about how you're going to meet those common measures, how you're going to assess and get feedback on how well your organization is doing. Next is sustainability. How this section will talk about how you can or will outlast the federal funding, how are you going to be proactive in looking for additional funding after the first year or for additional dollars that may not cover all of your program budget since you can only apply for either $300,000 or $200,000. If your program budget is above that, how will you be able to sustain and provide those services in addition to the Department of Labor funding? And then, as I mentioned, one of the most important things, the proposed housing strategy for homeless veterans. You're going to talk about any local housing resources that are there, and you must have linkages with a majority and a large variety of housing resources there. These include HUD, Section 8 VASH vouchers, HHS, community housing resources, grant and per diem programs, and any other local programs that might be available to veterans in your community. And the last section, which is for some of you might be a new section, you're going to describe how you will develop green jobs and the placement strategy that relates to those jobs in certain industries. So if you are going to be or looking for applying for funding to do green job development, this will be a section that you'll have quite a bit of information for. But one of the focuses recently underneath the Department of Labor has been green jobs, so you do at least want to address how you're going to be looking and how you'll address the green job factor. So those are the different sections of the technical proposal that goes into that 15 pages that we talked about. It's up to your organization to decide the format and how those will be put together, but you must address all of those factors that were just mentioned and listed in the SGA to receive the maximum points. The next section is the cost proposal. The biggest things here, in addition to making sure that all of your application dollars and budgets are the same, is that when necessary, they must be signed. So you must sign several of these documents, and you must include all of these for it to be complete. So the cost proposal includes the application for federal assistance, the budget narrative, the budget information sheet, the assurances and certifications page, which is Appendix C. You must have had a financial audit within the past 18 months, and include that information. You must list all of your employment and training grants for the past 3 years, your survey on ensuring equal opportunity for applicants, which is Appendix F, and your indirect charges or certificate of direct costs, which is Appendix I. Those are all things that would show that you have a complete cost proposal pay section. The SF-424, which is Appendix A, it is a document that must be signed by the individual who has a signing authority within your application. So the 424 is a standard form that must be signed and included there, and that's the main thing to keep into consideration there. You do not have to have matching dollars for this grant, but if you do have some and can show some within the 424, that will be a benefit to you. However, they are not required. The SF-424A, which is Appendix B, includes the different categories, personnel, which will be broken down in Appendix E, the fringe benefits, which will not exceed 35% of salary and wages, your travel. Once again, there will be a national conference hosted in D.C. in the January-August timeframe, must be included for it to be covered. However, you cannot exceed 5% of the total funds requested for your travel budget. Equipment is not to exceed $5,000. Supplies, your general office supplies, those types of things. Contractual training, any other services that may be offered. Follow-up services, any costs associated with the 90, 100, and 270-day follow-up must be included within your budget there, as well as any other that may be there, supportive services, those types of things. A key note is that administrative costs consist of direct and indirect costs associated with the supervision and management of the program. This cannot exceed 20% of the total grant award. So keep that in mind as you're filling out. Administrative costs are allowed. However, they cannot exceed 20% of the total grant award. The scoring criteria is listed on slide 25 here. The need for the program is 10 points. The overall strategy to increase employment and retention is 35 points. You can receive up to 10 additional points if you address or if you will be focusing on the barriers to employment faced by chronically homeless veterans. There is 10 additional points there. The quality and extent of linkages with other providers of services is 20 points. The demonstrated capacity in providing requirements, your past performance is worth 25 points, And the quality of overall housing strategy is 10 points. So this is a breakdown of how the points will be awarded for each of these sections. Some of the notes on budget, you must plan and obligate for funds to allow for follow-up activities, and you must include those in your budget if you do want to pay for those. And you should also talk about how you're going to track them within your technical proposal. So include funding in your budget, but then also talk about it in your narrative of how you will use those dollars to track individuals that exit your program. Just a few important reminders here listed on page slide 27, and then I'll open it up for some questions. Some things to keep in mind, and these things, majority of them have not changed, is that a participant must be homeless and a veteran to be eligible for the program. Homeless includes a person who lacks a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence. It includes shelters, institutions, and places not meant for regular sleeping accommodations. So keep in mind that they must be documented homeless in order to be enrolled in your program. As well, they must be a veteran. You must be able to document the fact that they are a veteran, a person who has served in the active military and who was not discharged or released under conditions other than dishonorable. You can only submit one application per organization, and you must only submit one application under each category, so you have to select them. Spend a lot of time talking about or making sure that you have established relationships and participation with the DVOPs and leavers within your community. You must work with other programs that are familiar with the needs of homeless veterans. As I mentioned, this is something that if your organization has a long history working with veterans, this is to your advantage because you know in your local community how to get those services fast to those veterans. Remember that this is an employment-focused program aimed at helping veterans get and maintain long-term meaningful employment. So this is how we're going to get veterans to do this on a long-term basis for meaningful employment, not just your minimum wage jobs, long-term meaningful employment. As most of you know, this is a very highly competitive grant with very high outcomes, and you must be prepared to meet those goals and outcomes in order to be funded and or to continue to receive those funding. The minimum score, minimum score is 70, but the competitive range is usually much higher. And based on those score breakdowns, you want to make sure that you can and are able to answer all of the questions that they are asking. The national average cost per placement last year was around $2,500. Keep this in mind as you're making your budgets and breakdowns of how you fall into that. Now, things will take into place if you're in a high-cost area or in a place where services are hard to reach. So this is just an average, but you should fall somewhere in line with that number. The program will be awarded no later than June 30th. However, it will begin on July 1st, so you must be ready to go and be able to provide those services starting July 1st. And once again, you must attend and budget for the post-award conference in July, August in Washington, D.C. underneath your travel budget. So it is important that you include that within your travel budget. Like I said, the few big changes of this SGA talk about the stand down, the different awarding categories, and some of the reporting requirements in regards to making sure that you have diverse program design and those types of things. At this point, I'm going to go ahead and open it up for questions, and we'll take as many as we can for the time allotted.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
As I mentioned, this information will be posted on our website as well as the audio from the call, so if you did miss any portion of it, you will be able to access that in the next couple of days.
Your first question comes from Erica Foreman.
Hi, Melanie. As far as we're looking at putting together in the section for the need for the program our updated numbers for homeless veterans, and I know that right now the most current census data is from 2000. There's some updated reports. Do you have any suggestions for finding a good statistic for a specific metropolitan statistical area? One, and then two, for the 2008 challenge report that the VA put out, they did not include in this report, they didn't do a breakdown by city of the populations of homeless veterans by city. Do you have any suggestions for direction for us to go?
Sure. We do have, you're correct when they didn't release the number of beds and those types of things by geographic location. However, we do have it listed on our website by VISN. Now, that doesn't break it down by community or local medical center, but it does break it down by VISN. And if you go underneath facts and media, and then, oops, no, I just had it pulled up, background and statistics, and then the last link there says number of homeless veterans and veterans specific by VISN, and that will give you the most information there in regards to the VISN information. The other place, some of the other places that you may or you could look at is some of your local HUD numbers. A lot of them are now reporting and requiring them to give you an idea of the homeless veteran numbers in your community. As well as if you are a program that are already up and running, you can use some of your numbers as well. The main thing here is that you just want to be able to demonstrate that you do know that there are challenge numbers, that there are census numbers, there are certain other things. However, and you just want to be able to show whoever's reading the grant that you have knowledge and that you are aware of all of these other statistics. However, they may not be as current as maybe a study that was done by your local homelessness council this past year, a year in time study, something like that. So it's usually a combination of both, both challenge, local, HUD, and different numbers there.
Can I ask one additional question, too?
Sure.
As far as the... it says on page 10 of the SGA that in addition, grantees and subawardees will be expected to register to be an employment network provider under the new Ticket to Work program.
Uh-huh.
On their website, there's not much information. It does give a phone number on there. Do you know what that process is like? Because we are not currently an employment network provider.
I do not believe it's that difficult. It's just something another, because it is an employment program, something that does require you to do that. And then if you are funded, then that's something, one of the things that you will have to do. But it, I don't believe it's that time intensive. But I, you know, I'm happy to find out more information, or you could try that number there and see. But because it's an employment program, it is one of their requirements.
And then as far as the stand down, the separate application for stand down funds, you said that we can apply for up to how much for the stand down?
$10,000 for the 3-day event and $7,000 for 1-day event.
Do you know when those applications are due?
It's a rolling application.
Okay.
And,
okay.
And it does do that. And like currently there's funding available. It's a rolling application. There is no deadline at this particular time.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from Steve Bolton.
Yes. I was in a training regarding grant and per diem, and the people there said that that they had changed the definition of homelessness a little bit, away from the McKinney Act definition and more towards the definition that HUD uses, and I'm wondering if you can update me on that.
This grant.
And I have one other question also.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, should I ask those up? Okay. The other one is I just wanted to make sure that the limit on admin costs or indirect costs, is it still 20% to include both occupancy and other overhead, 20% of the total grant?
Okay, the first question that you ask is the definition of homelessness.
Right.
The grant per diem program and Department of Labor, the VA and Department of Labor both use the same definition. It has not changed based there is a new definition of the McKinney-Vento Act, but these grants do not follow those. The application,
so they follow the old McKinney.
That's correct. Yep. There is no, if you're doubled up or sleeping on someone's couch, you are not considered homelessness. That is the biggest difference between the two.
Okay.
Then the second, your admin costs. There's a difference between indirect cost and admin cost depending on how your budget is set up. Very generally, admin cost, that is the administering of your program. So if you've got someone who is helping do reports, does your bills, those types of things, that's considered admin cost, and that can be 20%. That can be up to 20%. Your indirect cost rate is a fixed cost that is determined. It's a negotiated rate that you will have to determine with the Department of Labor if you already don't have that done.
Okay. I had understood that the 20% also had to include occupancy costs.
What do you mean by occupancy costs?
The cost that's charged to the program for the offices and facilities that they occupy.
It depends on how your budget is. I mean, how your program is set up. I don't know what you consider indirect costs and what you consider admin costs. So I wouldn't be able to answer that question. But there is a difference between indirect costs and admin costs. And so you would need to talk with your accountant to make sure that you have those delineated and that your admin costs aren't more than 20%.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Julian Grant.
Yes, good afternoon. Has there been any mention as to how many awards might be made under this grant?
Up to $5 million, so no.
No number?
They expect to award. Most of them will come in at the $300,000 or the $200,000 number. So, that's how it typically goes. The $5 million is available for the maximum of up to, the 200 and 300.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from Sergio Munoz.
Hi, a couple of questions on the 80% required to go through formalized training. Can you give us training and two on the Ticket to Work program as you're looking into the details? Would you explore the requirement to work with the disabled and placing them into employment, as that will certainly affect our enrollment numbers? That's it.
Okay, you broke up at the very beginning. You said the 80% and you wanted examples of what?
Yeah, examples of those formalized training programs that these vets are required to attend.
Okay. In general, that could be it's anything that is not covered under the basic skills. So it could be if you have a computer class, and it'll be taking place over 6 weeks. It's got a curriculum to it. It's got a time frame. It's got a schedule. It's pretty general when they're talking about formal. However, it's usually over a length of time with a certain set of curriculum that's tied to it. So your computer classes may start with basic, word processing and then go to Excel, and then you might have another class on internet job searches, how to write a resume. All of those things would be formalized classes that would have a curriculum, a plan, a setup, things that would go with it.
Okay, because we conduct a short-term job readiness training program, but it sounds like that would not be eligible.
Basically, from the way I read it within the if you look specifically at the SGA there, the only things that it talks about not being included in the formal is your money management and your basic life skills, like how to dress, how to shower, those types of things. Everything else should be included formal, and my suggestion would be to go ahead and make it formal within your program. So you take roll, you have people sign up, you take roll, you have teachers, the same set of curriculum, you have lessons plans, those types of things. So it is a formal event, not just something that's put together at the last minute.
Okay.
Does that answer that question?
And then the Ticket to Work, we're just becoming familiar with that. But it sounds like that people will be lining up to sign up for that, and that could very negatively impact our enrollment, our numbers, if we enroll folks and then can't find them full-time permanent employment.
Yeah, and this is something that I'll be honest with you, that I'm not as familiar with. I think this will be something that will be explored because it's an employment program. They are required to do it through the Department of Labor, and it would be something that you may want to mention that within your assessments, because, you know, as some of you that have had the programs before, the HVRP program is not the program for everyone, meaning it's an employment-specific program, and some individuals are not going to be or should not be considered eligible based on either their disability, on their mental health, something along those lines. Because the ultimate goal of your program is to get the long-term meaningful employment, it is going to be something that you are correct, that you are going to have to do an assessment and say, is it feasible for this individual to get employment on a long-term basis? Now, there is mention within the application that if you deem them not eligible or not ready for the program, you must be able to provide a reference or a resource to a referral to them. So in your instance, my suggestion would be, okay, we understand that some of these individuals may not fit our target group. However, we have this referral ready that we could send them to for additional resources.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Your next question comes from Deanne Tate.
Hi. My question is, we've been asked by another agency to provide them with case management for this grant that they're writing, that they're submitting. Will that knock us out if we provide them with a service from us submitting our grant on our own?
Well, you as an organization, I mean, honestly, it doesn't make sense to have you contracting services out and then applying for the same funding underneath the same grant. So it may be, it doesn't necessarily knock you out because you would be a partner organization with them technically. However, it is something to take in consideration. If by chance both of you were awarded, how would that affect your ability to provide those services?
Well, we have several case managers. I mean, what they're talking about is hiring a case manager to work at our facility because we're the the sole veterans agency in Orange County.
Well, then that would be to your benefit. And my suggestion, if you're the only organization that is serving veterans currently, that it may be best for you to not offer those services out, but to keep them into yours and keep it within your application, and that would make you more competitive than per se if, you know, in all honesty, you're giving them a competitive edge if you contract with them and offering your services out to them.
I see. Okay. The other question is, we do the whole county, the entire county, and so I haven't checked to see if the cities, but I don't know if any of the actual cities here, we have something like 53 cities here in this county, if any of them meet this 538,000 number.
Well, it would have to
urban,
be if,
so would we be considered non-urban even though we're doing the entire county?
Yes, if they don't all fall in that category, then yes. Now, you could target one of those groups and just serve individuals that may be in one of those major counties. However, those would be targeted. It would be targeted services to that geographic location.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. We're only targeting Orange County. I mean, that's the county that we serve. But there's no cities within the county that meet one of your top 75.
Then it would be non-urban.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Valerie Russell.
Most of the other questions that I had have been answered, but if you have this information, it would be helpful. On the stand down, it says that a certain amount will be awarded for a 3-day event. If you plan multiple events within the same program year, with the total being more than 3 days, do you think that would be allowable, even though it's
the maximum is 10? The maximum is 10,000, and you can only get one award for a stand down underneath a stand down grant.
I understand that. That wasn't the question. Does it have to be a 3-day event, consecutive 3 days?
No, stand downs are 1 to 3 day events where services are offered to veterans. So if some communities only have a 1-day event, that's fine. You just need to participate in that stand down.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Yeah, stand-downs are 1 to 3 day events. If you only have a local one that is 1 day, as long as you participate in that 1 day, then you would fulfill that stand-down requirement. there are more questions?
Your next question comes from Erica Foreman.
It's me again. What was my question? Oh, would NCHV be able to provide the returning applicants with a letter of support for the application?
Unfortunately, we do not provide them because we provide technical assistance under the grant. We don't provide support letters on blanket support letters for organizations.
It was worth a shot. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I know. It's it's a tax on staff, but it's also unfair to do that when we do provide technical assistance for the grants.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Okay. Well, I see we're almost at our conclusion here. If you do have additional questions or do want more information, you can give me an email or give me a call. My email address is mlilliston@nchv.org, and you can give me a call if you do have additional questions. We will provide the audio for the call as well as several links based on some of the questions here, and those will be put on our website within the next couple of days. But I want to thank everyone for their time. Our phone number here is 202-546-1969, and I wish everyone the best of luck in their applications. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.